You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
This is Quantum Leap Book Club, and our regular host, Parisha, will not be joining us today as she is traveling and teaching. But we have the co-host. We have Trina Cooper, lifelong entrepreneur from Denver, Colorado. Marianne Love, psychologist in Melbourne, Australia. We have Rosemary Heyer, teacher of English in Germany, Frankfurt, and Dr. Joyce Marlenhauer, doctor of naturopathy in Kingman, Arizona. And today we are going through the wonderful teachings in Mind into Matter by Fred Alan Wolfe. And we're also joined by others on the call today to discuss this potentially life-changing, depending on how you apply it, book. And I'm going to just call upon Trina there, who has some information that we're going to start with today's opening.
Hello, everybody, and it's good to see you. Last week we stopped about page 17, and one of the things that I wanted to bring forward today was a little bit around, was actually a footnote that was here. Let me grab this very quickly. Okay, so we were talking about this idea and concept of what the alchemists, that they sense the void, and that they would go from both sides of the equation looking for what's in the void. Well, one of the things that I found really interesting, and I wanted to bring up this idea of the footnotes, because there's some really wonderful footnotes in the back of this book, and it brings to life the book even more so than what we normally would get just by reading. So there's footnote 3 that deals with how he describes real and imaginal in this book. And so the way he describes it is that real refers to that which our common sense tells us, and most importantly, allows us to communicate what we sensed to another sentient being. And imaginal is that which that someone else doesn't sense with their five senses. We get it, but nobody else is there to affirm it for us. So it's really interesting. We find this in ourselves all the time, that we experience something, and if someone else experiences something, to us it's real. We can feel it, taste it, smell it, touch it, something. And someone else is there that says, hey, I just got the same thing. And that sort of cements it a little bit more in us. But if something happens to us, nobody else is there to confirm it. What ends up happening is that we begin to go into doubt. And it's like, was that real? Is that true? I don't know if that's true or not. And so what ends up happening is we're constantly having a battle with ourself, with what is what we perceive as real and what is imaginal. And a lot of times, oh, you probably just saw my little kids go running behind me too. what we sense, we consider real, and that's how he describes it. What nobody can affirm to us is imaginal. So our doubts, our beliefs, our old beliefs challenge us all the time. And we may have an absolutely fantastic experience, especially in meditation or in a group, you know, or out somewhere. We may have some extrasensory, but we don't trust it. And so moving through this whole idea of what's real and what's imaginal, everything is imaginal to us until we affirm it. And it can become incredibly powerful if we have an aha moment, or we sense something, or we know something, something comes through, something's extremely powerful for us, write it down in a journal, and so that you can go back to it. That can be your affirmation. Don't throw it away. Don't let those old programs in your head jump out and say, oh, that was all make-believe. Oh, that didn't really happen to me. Because we miss some of the most special stuff in our lives. That connection to this imaginal realm or this void, if we don't take it seriously. So that was something in a footnote from chapter one. And I encourage everybody to read the footnotes as they go through. When they see them, they can either do more research or they can find some little tidbits that Dr. Wolf put into the book that we may just gloss over if we don't. So that's kind of what I wanted to bring forward today. Trust yourself, accept what you get, and know that it's a grand adventure and that you're growing through it.
Grand adventure indeed. And I'd like to acknowledge all the people who've come on to the call today. We have a great lot of people. And just in what you were saying leads us, because we are going from, as we said, we finished around page 17, and we're moving, completing this chapter one and potentially into chapter two. And just in terms of what you were saying there, the whole part of this is about bringing the imaginal into the reality, as you said, into the reality of every day. So I definitely welcome our next co-host to share some of the information they have gained from this section.
This is Rosemary. Hello from Frankfurt, Germany. Hello, everybody. Can you hear me well?
Yes, great, Rosemary.
Unfortunately, a little bit, I'd like to go back to a question I had, and I was wondering what everyone else thinks about that. He's speaking on page 18 about the alchemist who are, their goal was to shatter actually the membrane of the illusion of separateness or separability. So they were really working on getting beyond that, what was the illusion of matter. And the question which came up for me is that he's saying that when they had done that, what they really had to do is work on their studies, and they had to work on themselves and to become actually self-realized. And my question is, why does it seem to be important to work on yourself if you want to go through the membrane of illusion? I mean, I've been asking myself that question. I mean, actually to work on yourself, to have self-mastery, to become enlightened, why is that important? So that you can actually understand the real and the imaginal, and the difference between what is real and what is imaginal. And that is a question I have maybe on others who are on the call, if someone wants to maybe answer that. I thought that it is probably a matter of the subjective reality, you know, like what Trina said, that only the imaginal, that what is in here or in the heart, is actually real. It's what also I think Nazim calls it the subjective reality, that there's only reality there which has to do with you. So I would say, and I know maybe someone else has some other ideas, I would say I can only really understand the world of separateness and cross through that into the world of oneness if I change this here inside, you know? So maybe some other people have some ideas to that.
That's a great question to pose. And I know Dr. Joyce Mollenhauer has some input to that one.
Well, if this is kind of related to what Rosemary was saying. I like the fact that he posed the question, what if the notion of finding the truth itself is purely imaginal? So that I got thinking very much about that. What do I even consider truth? And that fits into what Rosemary is saying, where is the line, and what is that? So then what I explored was this whole concept of inseparability, that things are not separate from each other, that there really are not distinctions. And the word elusive, I wanted to just understand more what it means to be elusive. So elusive in the dictionary says it's difficult to find or achieve, and it's difficult to remember or recall, and it's actually invisible to our senses. So all these sensory perceptions that we count on, what this book is going to help us get to is to touch base with things that we don't even see and don't believe in some cases are there. So the bottom line is inseparability is hard to describe. And I think there's a point in that to understand that we have worked very hard to have all these detailed thoughts about things. And if we quiet our mind, then some of that that's invisible that our senses don't, or it's beyond our senses. I don't think it's because our senses don't need to pick up on it. It's because it's beyond what our senses. So if we're going to discover, is truth itself imaginal? Then we need to explore some of these things. So that was what I was puzzling over as I worked through this.
That's a really important point. And I'm glad that I'm glad you raised that question as well, Rosemary. And there's probably others, Lisbeth or Robbie or Mary, Mike. Mary's got a hand up. Yes. And Mike.
I am so glad this has come up because I've said and read this so many times. And actually today I had a glimmer. So one of those elusive things. And I realized, okay, so what is he really saying? What if the notion of finding the truth itself is purely imaginary? And he goes in. You know, in the next paragraph, he talks about impossible again. And I'm thinking, does he really mean impossible? Because what does he really mean imaginary? Is saying that truth is imaginary, is he saying that's lesser than something? And I'm realizing, so he's talking, the way I put it together in my mind was, white contains every color that's in the spectrum. So does black, the void. The void, as he talks about it, has every potential, every possibility, anything we can imagine. So if he's talking about that impossible life death and that everything is inseparable, I began to look at this and understand that he's saying that life and death are not separate. They're inseparable. So what he's looking at here, and then that whole thing about why would we need to work on ourselves, and then over on 19 above that picture, he says to make clear to themselves that there's really no distinction between real and imaginal. He says you have to willfully go from one realm to the other. So he's saying they both exist at the same time. It's when we take a look at white, are we seeing, or black, are we seeing all the colors? When we see black, are we allowing ourselves for any potential to exist? Or are we honed on one little thing and that's how we boxed ourselves in into a limited perception that allows not our imagination no room to explore anything else. So for me, the answer is understanding, the more that we understand that this whole understanding of matter is an illusion, and yet at the same time, mind and matter are not separate. You can't have mind without matter. You can't have matter without mind. So the more that we explore the understanding of that, that when we, like Joy says, we sit and we're quiet and we allow thoughts, perceptions, understandings to come to us, and the more that we can allow that and allow that that can be a matter that we experienced in our life, that's us going back and forth across that threshold more often, so that there is that threshold. We simply understand we need to put more red in to our composition to be able to see all the colors that make up white. Or we need to put in, I can't get up in the morning because, well, that is saying that there's something impossible and something that we can't imagine to be true. So imagine more, cross that threshold back and forth, and imagine getting up in the morning and it being easy. And that sounds really simple, but what I'm getting from reading this again today, it's that imagination, imagining what you want to be so much more that becomes what is. That becomes not something impossible anymore. So you're allowing your imaginal to be what you experience. Hopefully that made sense and did not just ramble.
It did make sense, and I think a key word there is inertia. Like when you said to reimagine something different, what is that? You know, the getting up in the bed, I can do it early or late. The difference between you can visualize it, and then there's that point where it says in the book, there is no easy task because of the law of inertia. Now, we don't want to make in our minds think that everything's hard, but to understand that coming up against something and pushing up against it is a natural law. So just because it's hard, keep going. Or if we perceive it as hard, just keep going. And then that moves, and then it is what we imagine. And Mike, I saw your hand up as well.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Sorry, that headset doesn't work sometimes. Well, I guess there's not really any reason for me to say anything, because I was actually going to just say to Rosemary that I think the answer to your question is right on page 20, where he talks about the secret law of inertia. Because what he's basically trying to tell us is, like moving anything, if you wanted to move your car, it's real hard to get it going. Once you get it going, it goes pretty easy, right? Well, that force that it takes to get it moving is inertia. And mentally, we have the same thing. Once we make the decision to try to move, sometimes making that first step and getting things rolling takes a lot of energy. And then once we're into it, it seems easier. That's what I think he's talking about. And I think that's why he's saying, that's why you need to do these practices, because you need to change the inertia from the old stiff one that's not moving and move it in a new direction. And then Joyce, I had a comment on what you said, since I've got the floor here. One thing that I hear lots of times us say, and I'm guilty of this myself, we sort of say, oh, that's beyond your senses, as if, you know, your senses aren't good enough or something. But we have to understand, you know, our senses do exactly what they were designed to do. It's just we're trying to ask them to go where they don't go. You know, you can't ask your eyes to see outside the visual spectrum, because our eyes aren't made to do that. You know, they don't see x-rays, or, you know, most people's eyes don't see x-rays. You can see x-rays if you see them with something else, but it's not your eyes. Your eyes aren't designed to do that. So I'm just saying our senses are good. We just need to start developing the other 32 of them that we have that we don't use often enough. That's my thoughts anyway.
They're really important thoughts, Mike, because that sort of thing does come up every day. It comes up to say, what are we creating? How much do we have to push through it? But the, and then the other part of that is we're saying is the imaginal. To help us push through something is knowing what it could look like. And that's that part of the imaginal. The more we can picture it and feel it on the inside world, the in theory, the easier the inertia will be to push through to get there, because we actually already have a sense of it. Our body has a sense of it. Our electromagnetic field has a sense of it. So that's where that fine veil, as they're saying, the in there world of imagining and the out there world of it being, the more we can make it real in the imaginal, the more we can push through the inertia. And who else would like to comment on that part, or indeed if you have another part of these pages of the book around, you know, between pretty much all of chapter one, there's fantastic information. If something's really stood out for you, most welcome to contribute. Just raise your hand and come off mute. Yeah, I can see Nikki there.
Hi, Nikki Sawaya here in Kingman, Arizona, and continuing and sort of expanding on what Michael was saying about the senses, yes, there's a certain spectrum that our eyes are able to see as humans, and you know, different animals, for example, see different things, which is why our cats or our dogs might be reacting to things that we're like, what the heck are you looking at? But there's also the fact that there's a lot of things that we perceive that we have been taught since we were children to disregard. So I think some of this stepping through the veil and experiencing these other things that are beyond our senses or non-physical is an attempt to get back to opening up what are we fully capable of seeing. And I remember reading a long time ago about people's experience with LSD and how the LSD and some other drugs lower the threshold that says what's reality and what isn't, because for example, when people say, oh, the walls are breathing, or different experiences like that, it's most likely that that's something that we want to disregard. That if you really sat there without any drugs and just paid attention, that you would observe that kind of fluctuation of reality. But we turn it off because it's too distracting to say, oh, that wall isn't quite where I think it is or where it's supposed to be, which maybe that understanding of it's fluctuating is how we can begin to do the unusual of, say, stepping through a wall, because then we realize, oh, there's spaces between those atoms. And some of those experiences you might get, I'm an artist, from, you know, paying attention and looking at things. And sometimes you might notice it more when you're extremely tired. I know, for example, myself, I've done that. Noticing a tile floor that's made up of the little bitty, like half inch, six-sided tiles, and they're all white. Except when you're extremely tired, when I was extremely tired, I noticed that some are more yellow, some are more blue, some are more pink. It's still all white, but it's different variations of it. So expanding your perception and saying, is the wall breathing? Is that wall fluctuating? Is this, you know, is there another sound that I usually tune out? And then when we open ourselves to having those other experiences, what are those things that we're perceiving out of the corner of our eye? What are we allowing ourselves? So like when we were little kids and we're taught that, you know, you have an imaginary friend, it's like, oh, no, you don't. Well, now there's pictures that you can see on the internet. People have taken photos with digital cameras. This one lady took a photo of her kid playing at like a McDonald's or whatever. and she saw a face next to her child that showed up. She didn't see it with her own eyes, but she saw it, that the camera caught it. And she's like, "Who's that?" And the kid said, "That's my friend." So how much of what have we been conditioned to disregard? So that's that additional perception that we can open ourselves to.
It's a great point. And I think for all of us to ask ourselves those things, and in the everyday to be open to it, knowing that it's there, whatever happened in the past, knowing that right now we know we have a knowingness. So now it's about moving to having an experience of it. And when we look, we'll probably find experiences. So maybe in our imaginal, if we feel there's a little glimpse of something, we're more open to it. I know that's something I personally am, definitely ready to move to do more of. For example, being in nature, there's a feeling, but then there can still be all the normal mind chatter. So it's about actually saying, here, ready, communicating, listening. So to also create those times in your day that it doesn't just have to be a random pop-up, but an invitation, like a young person does with their friend, their so-called imaginary but real friend, so that we then create and invite in. So that's a great reminder there. Who else would like to add to this?
I'm happy to go next. Robbie, things nobody's jumping in.
Ah, yes.
I was just thinking, like, but fundamentally, he's really saying we create our reality through what we put our attention on. So if you think about it, for me, he's saying, if I wanted to manifest something in third dimension, it would require me to imagine it, think of it, dream it up, feel it, know it to be true in my full being, and it will appear in third dimension. That's what this whole book is talking about in my view. And then if we consider what we're looking at as real is really what we've been taught as something in third dimension, and it's been named. And so if we were raised in another context, real would look different. Real is different in different contexts depending on what has been named in your life. And so I think a big part of undoing that naming and to break through the inertia is to get new information constantly about what is possible. And I feel like the sciences and the SIMS work is amazing to really help understand all the work in quantum physics. Is actually, there's a science that says everything is energy, just simply oscillating. It's all information. There's actually nothing there. It's only information, even on a science level we're finding today. So his work, I feel, is really pulling this together for all of us to really help live this and make it our norm. And it's not some crazy out there thing anymore. It's like there's not a massive divide between imaginal and real. It is all. I had this real drop-in experience once where I got a really strong sense and knowing that everything is a reflection of me. And so I really felt like nothing was outside my creation of my seeing it. And I think it's those drop-in experiences that really help expand our reality. And you can't make them happen, unfortunately, that you just have to keep open to meditating and getting new information and then seeing how it lands in the being. Anyway, so that's what I wanted to share. I love this work. Love this material.
Yes, it's wonderful to just keep that remembering that the sciences are catching up, we could almost say, with what the ancient wisdom's always known. So it's so good to see that, really validating it and validating, again, what's natural to a lot of us if we allow it. And I did see that Robbie had her hand up as well.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about, this is Robbie from Kingman, Arizona. I wanted to talk about what I think is the importance of resistance in terms of inertia. So I'm going to start out with an example here of, say, you had a book and you slid it across a table. Well, there's a force called friction that would eventually stop that book from sliding. But if there was no friction, that book would just keep going. It wouldn't stop. You know, same thing like if you were to throw a rock through the air, eventually the force of gravity would cause that rock to fall down. But if there was no gravity, the rock would just keep going. Well, thoughts are like that. Thoughts are electromagnetic energy, and electromagnetic energy does not encounter friction. When we think a thought, it just keeps going. So it's not subject to, you know, the physical laws such as gravity. So whatever we're thinking, it's just going to keep going. That's inertia. We're going to keep thinking that thought. We're just going to keep, you know, being that person, being the same way as we've always been. And Dr. Wolf's whole book, like Marianne was saying, is about changing. So here's the classic example of changing that we've talked about before. Think about an airplane taking off from a runway, how much energy and effort it takes to get the plane off the runway and into the air and moving forward. Well, what if you suddenly decided, the pilot decided that it was going the exact opposite direction it should be? Consider the amount of energy it takes to turn that plane around and go the opposite direction. I mean, it's just, you know, gigantic, the amount of energy that it would take to do that. So that is the same as trying to turn one of our thoughts around. Changing something in ourselves takes that amount of energy. So the bigger the resistance that we're encountering, the bigger the change we're facing and we're taking on. And I'm sure that we can all think of examples in our lives where, you know, there's been some kind of opportunity presented to us, or somebody said, you know, you should do this or that or the other thing, and we think, no way I'm ever going to do that. That's too much. You know, for example, I can think of about 30 years ago, a friend of mine told me, and I was living in Canada at the time, a friend of mine told me, you know, someday I can see you living in Arizona. And I was like, no way. There is no way I will ever leave this country. There's no way I'll go to the States. And there's no way I will ever move to Arizona. Like, you know, you're crazy. You know, here I am. I'm living in Arizona. But I had to go through a lot of resistance in order to get to Arizona. But the whole reason I ended up in Arizona was to pursue something that's part of a much greater vision that I have for my life. But I had to go through a ton of resistance. So I'm just saying that I think what Dr. Wolf is saying is that the more resistance that we can think of, or that comes to us, or that we can imagine when facing some kind of change in our life, it has to measure the importance of that change. So we have to look at that. It kind of measures, it's a gauge for the importance of that change we're about to make. And that's what I wanted to share.
Absolutely. Because there's the line in the book as well, that talking about those ancient alchemists, they'd seen how information could transform into matter. And like you're saying there, the information, your thought is information. It just keeps going out. So if you have an imaginal about a big picture life goal, that's going to keep going out. You may or may not know how it comes back to you. So just know that whatever's going out there, if you've sent it out, they say expect unexpected. It could come in any shape. And that's, as you said, part of that getting over the inertia. If it doesn't look like what you expect it to look like, still say, oh, okay, hello, and allow there to be a dialogue with that and an openness. Okay, and I saw, Prisma, I saw Mike's hand. Yes, I did.
Can you guys hear me? You can hear me? Oh, good.
Yes.
Great. I just had a thought, and this will tell you how a crazy mathematician's mind thinks sometimes. But the formula for inertia, I don't know if you guys know what it is. It's mass times acceleration. And that kind of explains if you have a big mass, like a train, takes a whole lot of push in order to accelerate it even the tiniest little bit. But the other side of the coin is if you have something that moves very, very fast, or you accelerate something very, very fast, even if the mass is very, very small, you can create an enormous force. And I'm thinking, okay, so what's the speed of thought? The speed of thought is pretty darn fast. So it doesn't have to have a whole lot of mass for you people out there who were trying to measure it. You know, it can be so infinitesimally you can't even measure it, and it's still practically, you know, can pack a wallop. So I just kind of thought of that from a purely physics point of view, that thoughts really can have a huge impact. So that's musings of a scientist. Thanks.
I think that's really great. And I guess the other part of that too is that the bigger the object is, that could be the bigger and clearer your vision or the bigger and clearer your imaginal, the easier it will be to overcome inertia, because it's like a train moving, it will overcome it faster. So, and then I saw Nikki's hand up.
Yes, and taking that same mathematic perspective and looking at it, and what Robbie was saying about inertia, when we have a speed of a thought, the inertia or resistance is also the doubts. So getting clear on one of the sayings, Russell, why can't you have that? Why can't you do that? Why can't that be the thing that is? What is your mental block? And becoming aware of that, because that's the friction and that's preventing it from happening. And so on the big things, the big mass things that takes a lot of mental pushing, clear focus, sustained persistence, thought, and focus, you might have a mental resistance. So, you know, those are the so-called harder to achieve, because you might have more doubts that you need to erase that friction. So that's giving it more of the push to go and, say, throw that rock into outer space and escape gravity. And the smaller things, the small mass things, it's like, can I win $1 million? Can I win the lottery? That might be a harder mental thing to overcome. Do I even know what $1 million looks like? But can I find $10 on the street? Sure. Why not? Can someone just walk up to me and hand me $10? Sure. Why not? Those kind of things can just be drop-ins. Or maybe you have a big picture goal, and you have the image of those things that are part of your big picture. And maybe some of them are secondary, like, well, it'd be really nice if this happened, you know, and I got to bring along a friend or whatever, something like that. It got a secondary thing. Those things might happen more easily because you don't have as much attachment or resistance or inertia to overcome. So you allow them in.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. And it does link back to the chapter about it's still today, there can be a so-called difficulty, it says, in believing that the imaginal has an effect on the outside world. But what we just need to know is that it does, and then live that. And I'm just having a look through all the wonderful faces and people on the call. Margaret, I can see you've got your hand up.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. through reading this chapter, it just brings my mindset back to vision quests. and what Vision Quest have meant to me, and just the things that you discover on Vision Quest, time set aside, inertia, just being there for the 4 days and four nights, and many of the things that I felt were separated, coming back to being inseparable. So that's what this chapter basically, it just reminds me of bridging gaps and things that I've had, that I've experienced on Vision Quest, and I just wanted to share that.
I appreciate that. Yes. Yes, that's giving that quiet time. And Maria, did you have a comment there as well?
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Just had to take care of something there for a minute. I guess, and just, you know, the thought that's coming to my mind as we're listening to all of these things, and I guess it kind of comes full circle around with what Rosemary was saying, is why do we need to work on ourselves? And when I was reading this, I know we've read this book before, and it's highlighted like crazy. And I started to just, I don't know, everything just started to come to alive again. And it just brought to mind to me what he says on, and we're dealing with the secret, you know, the laws of inertia, is that he's addressing the issue of thoughts. And, you know, he says on page 20, once a new way to feel about your thoughts arises, you begin to sense the out there world with new eyes, creatively, informatively, newly as a child. And then I kept kind of noticing the things that I highlighted. And then in the next paragraph, he says, and each new thought institutes a cycle. And then in the next page on 21, what really came to me was, if we let these thoughts grow and lives without check, in other words, why we need to work on ourselves, thought, it becomes an archetype. And it possesses the user as assuredly as any demon possesses a medieval philosopher hell-bound to tap the secrets of God. And I guess it just summarizes everything that we've been talking about tonight, that it's what we've been taught to think of ourselves as separate. I know for me, my quest has always been to be that one in sort of where it's, there's no separation from God. And in the work that we've been, you know, doing and looking in terms of quantum physics, and even with Haseem and all the work that's it's just bringing to me full circle the importance of not allowing certain thoughts that I have to become those archetypes, because then they become so ingrained, they become demons. So that becomes the separation between me and everything that is out there. That was a really powerful statement as I was reading this today.
Absolutely, Maria. I'm really happy you shared that one in particular. Yes. And I know Mary's got to add to that as well.
Maria, I went to the same place on chapter 20, because I was thinking, what if we're not aware? How do we become aware? What if I think I'm doing everything, that I'm really enlightened, I do my meditation, and I'm really put everything into place, and then I come up against a wall and find out that I haven't been? So how do I become aware? And you know, so how do I remove that demon? Because that demon's sitting there, you know, putting a veil over me or whatever. It's just me, of course. I know that. No one's doing it to me. But so how do I become aware? And again, it's that chapter, that last paragraph on page 20, when he says, once a new way to feel about your thoughts arises, you begin to sense the out there world with new eyes, creatively, informatively, newly as a child. So he talks about new intuitions arise, new thoughts arise. They can appear as visions. So it's what, in feeling a certain area, making sure we've got that lasting feeling he's talking about. Let's say, okay, waking up in the morning, okay, I'm getting a lasting feeling about that. And that it's easy to do. As I'm doing, I'm realizing as I'm allowing new lasting feelings to come in, that's opening up the doorway to allow all kinds of new information to come in. So the more that we allow new, you know, that lasting new feeling, the more that we're saying, okay, there can be new things. So when we come up against something, it's like, oh, crap, I thought I took care of that. It's just letting us know there is more to take care of. There is more to hold on to the feelings of, I'm so happy to get, I'm just going to keep using that one. So happy to get up in the morning. Then that can allow happy sequences all through the day that I had never even imagined. They were sitting out there in that void, and I impossible to imagine because I hadn't allowed them before. And yet I had allowed a little bit of light in, like I had planted a seed by allowing something new over here. And the new over here has opened the door to allow more new things in. So, and then those demons just go away, like those neurons that just dry up because we don't keep going down that same path anymore.
Awesome. We love that. They just dry up. Don't go down that path. That's great. And I know Gabrielle in Mount Beauty, Australia. Welcome.
Yes, welcome. Yes, I'm here in Mum Beauty in the winter. I just wanted to share an experience I had yesterday, you know, about being non-separate. It was just so profound. I'm working from home counseling people, so I'm getting ready to call one of my clients. And in getting ready, I was thinking of the young woman, and you know, her circumstances are, like, in a nutshell, she's homeless at the moment, living at the river in the middle of winter. That's why I mentioned it's winter here. It's very cold here at the moment, and all sorts of other concerns. So I'm in my empathy and positive regard, I'm sitting here getting ready to make that phone call to her. And then I looked around and I had the fire going. I had a hot cup of tea next to me. And for a moment I sat there and I thought, oh wow, this is rather different to where she's at the moment, without trying to judge, but just seeing the difference. And in that moment, and I have never experienced anything like it before, it was a moment of like melting together with her and becoming one. In that, it was just the moment, it was the most fantastic experience I've ever had. It just went like, whoa. And it was so beautiful. And then our call was very amazing, you know, because I felt absolutely one with her, and our circumstances didn't matter, they weren't even part of the equation. So it was a most wonderful experience, and I'm pursuing that actively now all the time, that non-separation and getting that feeling again. I wanted to share that was special.
That's a wonderful sharing, and very special. Absolutely. And Elizabeth.
All right. That was an amazing sounding experience, Gabrielle. It's a good thing. Sounds like a very good thing. What I've been thinking about on and off as this discussion has gone on is the term magical thinking, which they often apply to children, the way they think. And it's almost as if I think that they're not thinking. They're just experiencing from one moment to the next, that maybe they may have some kind of thoughts, but they're somewhat different than adult thoughts because we have been so programmed for so long. But I was thinking about that today because I was explaining it to my very good friend, how wonderful it is to be a child and to have magical thinking. It's so playful. It's the word playful comes to mind, and it's very much in the imaginal world. And it's for the child, if they're in a good place and they're having magical thinking, it's very imaginal. They're in a story. It's fantastical. They're really in an inner space rather than an outer space. And that reminds me of what Fred Allen Wolfe says at the beginning. In the first chapter, he says, a fully realized mystic then becomes in the image of God, the Adam Kadmon. And he also says in the same paragraph on page 5 that the goal really is to, we were made in the image of God. And to me, the goal is to return to express that fully, as much as fully as possible, and to experience our inner life in that way. And of course, for many people, there'd be a lot of inertia involved and doubt, as Nikisi Weya says. Oh, that's hubris. That's a word. You're aspiring to be godlike. But at the same time, I think my favorite biblical saying is, God is love, and those that dwell in love dwell in God, and God in them. And what could be better is to be feeling this wonderful experience of love toward everything you're encountering moment by moment and day by day, and enjoying it and having life be in a playful experience. Of course, that's idealistic. It's in your head, but why not? And another thing that occurs to me is that I know some of you use the runes, casting runes. Which is the, Nordic type of oracle, where there are little stones and they've got glyphs on them. They're symbolic and every day. But over and over, I've been doing this, with this book, the Book of Runes. over and over you get, the author speaks of your experience with the runes as, he says, the self, and he uses a small letter, like not the capital letter, the small letter for self, and for S, and you can, and he compares it to the self, the higher self, or the godlike self with the capital S. And over it's your little self is needs to be like your big self, or that's the aspiration. And it's, to me, it's very similar. What he's saying is to become the Adam Kadmon. And the image of the Adam Kadmon that is given in the Kabbalistic teachings is that we have like golden light shooting out of every orifice in our body. And that, obviously that would be, it's a symbolic expression of something that would, in my opinion, be very an ecstatic experience, to be somewhat a being of the sun, just shooting out all this power and energy. It has to be ecstatic. And so I guess I'm maybe running on a little bit, because I don't really have a conclusion, except that this book keeps leading us back to our highest goals and our highest imaginations of what we can truly be. And that's very, very exciting.
That absolutely is, Elizabeth. And your question, why not? Why not just be joyful? And I appreciate that. And I hand that over to Marianne in Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, hi there. I wasn't quite expecting. The only thought I was reflecting back on a couple of people. Mary, when you were saying about how do you know, you know, how you're going with some of this stuff, and I realized that in a way we're constantly manifesting, so we know how we're going because we can just look around and see what actually we're manifesting in this moment. And if we're not happy about it, then it's time to look inside, because really it's a reflection of what we're master creators, and here it is, you know, everything around you is what you've manifested, it's what you visioned and dreamed, and our job is to get it off the unconscious, the you know, get it off automatic pilot and unconscious, because a lot of that's other people's programming and generations of cellular information in us. It's not even ours. So yeah, I just wanted to add that little bit in.
Yeah, and that the when I say the wall, it's like comes smack up against the what you produced. You realize, oh, that came from me. That means I'm not quite there yet, but at least I know there's that ingredient to work with. That's the red maybe I need to focus on in creating my white, or the whatever the ingredient in the void is that I need to put more intention in.
Totally. And a really good point there too about generational storylines that we can bring forward. So you don't have to always know exactly your bit in this life, but just be aware that that could be there. And on that, we appreciate that. And Trina in Denver.
I just have a really quick one. It's as I was listening to everybody sharing, it took me back to the top of page 18, where he asked the question, what if the notion of finding the truth itself is purely imaginary? What if we've completely created all of this? It's all story, and we're just winding through the stories that we've created in our mind. And that just really hit me. So I just really wanted to share the fact that, what if finding the truth is just always there, and we just have to open to it. So that was, it was like, oh, I love that one.
I think that is, that's an absolutely perfect way to complete today's call as well. So you've been joining us on Quantum Leap Book Club, Mind Into Matter by Dr. Fred Allen Wolf. You matter and you make a difference. So join us same time next week as we go through more of this amazing life-changing book. Talk to you all soon.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.